So, good morning, everybody. I have a feeling we'll have a few more folks drifting in over the next few minutes, but that's okay. We'll get going. I know that we have a full agenda today. And I'm Lyndall. I'll be our meditation leader today. And Lauren Wilson is going to be our Dharma teacher and give our talk. And as you know, this last month we've been working with the topic of addiction and before that with the related topic of habit. But today we're going to do something a little different. And in the honor of Earth Day this week, Lauren is going to be giving a talk on Dharma and climate change. And on Monday night, Tim will be giving a talk on the same topic. So it's a little bit different, but at the same time, it does relate to our topic of addiction since, you know, when you think about it, it's really our greed and our attachment to comfort that has played a big role in getting us to this place where we are with the climate crisis. So we'll follow our usual agenda for this morning. I don't think there's anybody new here today that maybe, Kelly is new to the Sunday sit, but she isn't new to Sims. But I'll just go over our usual agenda. We meet from 10 to 11:30. There'll be a guided meditation of about 25 minutes, the Dharma talk, and then some small group discussion, and then a closing with announcements and metta and offering of merit. And again, just really a warm welcome to everybody here for our maybe a little bit different talk today. Before we begin, our custom is to read our community statement. So we remember why we're gathering together this morning and, you know, reminding us that even though we're online in Zoom, we're still a community. So our community statement, as we enter this space, let us remember that we are entering a sacred space, a space for being in the moment with whatever is present. We recognize our deep connection with one another, where each of us is welcome, just as we are. Freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same and reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. It is with gratitude that we practice together. So, you know, beautiful sentiments. When I read it, I really kind of take it in. So hopefully when we listen, we will take it in too. So in keeping with our topic for this morning, the focus of our guided meditation today will be our connection with nature. And so we'll begin as we usually do with our three community breaths. I'll ring the bell once as we start and three times as we end. So beginning to remind us that we're together and to settle us and bring us here. Three nice deep community breaths. Breathing in and out. Again. Making any adjustments you might need to feel comfortable. Relaxing the body. Mm-hmm. releasing areas of tension as much as you're able. Now, as I said, our topic will be our connection with nature. And I know that many of you are familiar with the Burmese monk Sayadaw Utejan Nia, whose teachings have been quite influential in the Vipassana community over the past, a number of years now. And one of the things he often says is that when we study Dharma, we're studying nature. We're observing nature. And I think that theme is especially appropriate today when we'll be talking about climate change, where our connection with the natural world and nature is so important. And there are many ways in which we can practice with nature, but one of the ones that makes a very direct connection in our meditation practice is practicing with the four elements: earth, air, fire, and water, observing their characteristics in our own minds and bodies. In the time of the Buddha, before the periodic table and our scientific understanding, air, fire, earth, and water actually were thought of as the four elements that everything was made up of. But even today, when we have a more sophisticated idea about the composition of all matter, observing the four elements can really help us appreciate the body and its connection with all of nature, and help us to reflect that even though these four elements of earth, air, fire, and water are an ancient traditional understanding of the natural world, even our more sophisticated understanding conveys a very similar message, that all things are made up of similar elements in various combinations. So we all share a common nature. So let's give this meditation a try. Settling in and beginning with the earth element, the element of solidity, of hardness. We might notice this element first in the solid feeling of the body sitting, our contact with our cushion or chair, the support the ground provides, the solidness of the body, we might also notice the earth element in hardness in the body, the bones, the skeleton that supports us, the framework of the body. So just feeling in your own way that sense of stability, of hardness, of groundedness, of stillness. And then moving on to the air element. First noticing this in the breath, moving in and out of the body, the connection of our body to the air around us. feeling the sensations of breathing. We might also feel the air in contact with other parts of our bodies. Maybe the movement of the air on our skin. We might also feel a sense of lightness or spaciousness within the body. Sometimes it feels very solid, but other times it can feel very porous. Not always so solid. Maybe that sense of movement within the body. The way that the air moves like the wind. Air element. And then the fire element. Noticing temperature, heat. Perhaps feeling the warmth in the body. Or possibly the opposite, the absence of warmth. We might also sense the fire element in feelings of energy in the body. Energy, currents, heat, movement. The way a crackling fire might run through grass. Warmth and energy, the fire element. And this brings us to the water element, which is associated with moisture and also the sense of connectivity flowing fluidity. Noticing moisture in the body, maybe in your saliva or sweat. Tears or fluid in the eyes. Perhaps having awareness of the moist internal surfaces of the body. Sense of connectivity, the blood, for example, flowing throughout the body. Moisture, fluidity, the water element. Noticing these elements, we begin to appreciate these qualities in the body and can reflect too that these elements are in all of nature. The solidness of the earth, the moisture and the dew on the grass and the rain, the heat of the sun, the movement of the wind. We can get a sense of how these things are present in all life. Connect us with all life. So taking a few moments to just notice in your own way these four elements in your body. Now let's turn our attention to the mind. Remembering, even though it is often challenging for us, that the mind too is part of nature. And in the mind and the emotions, just as in the body and in the natural world, we can sense the presence of those four elements: earth, air, fire, and water. Beginning again with the earth element. We might sense it when we feel a stability of mind, a sense of groundedness, of stillness, of equanimity. Though it may also show up in a kind of rigidity in the mind and an unwillingness to adapt or bend. Turning to the air element, we might sense it when our mind feels light and free, not holding on to anything, when thoughts are just passing by like clouds drifting across the sky. But we may also sense it in restlessness and indecision when our minds are constantly moving this way and that, like branches in the wind. Then there's the fire element, which we might feel in the gentle warmth of metta, gratitude, affection, joy. But we can also feel the fire element in the fiery nature of anger. And the water element, which we might sense when there's stillness in the mind, like a quiet pool. Or when the mind feels adaptable and pliable and can move easily around obstacles, like a flowing stream. Taking some time to see in your own way, in your own mind and emotions, the characteristics of these four elements. Earth, air, fire, water, sensing these elements in our mental and emotional experience may give us a sense of how even those things we think of as so unique to us as individuals, our emotions and our personality, may be reflected in the natural world and our part of nature. Returning for the last few minutes of the sit, if you'd like, to the body. Earth element, its solidity and stability. Its connection with the air element through the breath. Fire element in our living warmth. Water element in fluidity and moisture. I'd like to bring our sitting to a close with a quote from the Japanese Zen master Dogen. He says, "I came to realize clearly that the mind is nothing other than rivers and mountains and the great wide earth, the sun and the moon and the stars. The mind is nothing other than rivers and mountains and the great wide earth, the sun and the moon and the stars. Let us find our refuge here in the rivers and mountains and the great wide earth, the sun and the moon and the stars."
Good morning. I am sometimes a co-teacher here at Sunday Sit, but I also am part of the SIMS Climate Action Group, and I am happy to be talking about climate this morning, climate crisis this morning, actually. Before I begin, I want to acknowledge that we are on Coast Salish lands, whose original and current caretakers are the Duwamish, the Suquamish, the Tulalip and Muckleshoot tribes, nations. And this is something I learned recently at one of our Climate Action Group series talks where we had storytellers. And one of them was from the Tsleil-Waututh tribe. And he put his hands up and he said, "My hands go up to honor you." This way. Thanks, Ken. I'm not sure. Okay, it goes this way. Anyway, I'm just learning it, but I think that's such a nice greeting. So we have this one that we know from Tibet, Nepal, and other Buddhist places. And then there's this one that's an indigenous custom. So I would like to say my hands go up to honor the strength, resilience, and wisdom of the Indigenous nations that are helping to take care of our environment. I'm going to start with a poem, a story. It's kind of a story poem. It's very, very short. There are only three characters. There's a father, a daughter, and a spider. And I'm reading it because I think it has a lot of themes that relate to our climate crisis and the way we can respond with the support of Dharma wisdom. So the title is Mimesis, which is a Greek word meaning imitate or mimic. It's by Fady Judah. My daughter wouldn't hurt a spider that had nested between her bicycle handles. For 2 weeks, she waited until it left of its own accord. If you tear down the web, I said, it will simply know that this isn't a place to call home, and you'd get to go biking. She said, that's how others become refugees, isn't it? That poem really touched me, and it made me think of a number of things that I appreciated and respected. First of all, the daughter had a lot of, she had respect and compassion for the spider who'd found a home and her handlebars. It reminded me that our refuge, our home, the earth, is threatened too by global warming. And that spider could easily have been threatened by any one of us, or because human beings, at least Western civilized human beings, have been living in a culture that's pretty separate from smaller creatures and pretty has a lot of hubris about our place in the scheme of things. It also made me think that it made me think of another way of looking at human beings and spiders. And it reminded me of a story I used to read to my students called Anansi the Spider. And it was an Ashanti story from Africa. I can't remember which nation, which tribe it was. But, it was Ashanti. Yeah, it was the Ashanti nation. That's right. And I've read a lot of other stories from indigenous cultures that where the spider is very important and is a god. So I like the way this daughter saw that spider as a very important part of the earth and an equal right with us to keep its home. The father said, you know, you could tear down that web. And that is so, so much a way of responding in our Western civilized industrial culture. We've got a lot of power and, you know, we can just push aside things that get in our way. But just because we have power, do we have to use it? Or can we think about the consequences and the harm we might cause? When I was hearing the storyteller, the Tsklalam storyteller, he said something that I thought was important with relationship to climate. Human beings belong to the earth. The earth doesn't belong to humans, which then made me think of the second precept, which is not to take what is not offered. And then I thought about mindfulness, because I thought this daughter was so mindful. She must have thought and reflected a while to see the connection between the spider and the refugee issue. And lastly, I thought about renunciation and the fact that she chose not to ride a bike for 2 weeks so that a spider could have its home and let it take its leave rather than her pushing it away. She had to let go of something that she probably wanted to do, ride her bike. So anyway, that poem really impressed me, and I thought it would be good to start off my talk this morning. So the daughter is pretty, you know, most likely she's not a Buddhist, but she inspired me, and I think the Dharma can inspire and support us as we face the climate crisis. So just a quick summary. Climate scientists warn that we're approaching tipping points that are irreversible. The Earth is suffering. Global temperatures are on their way to rising close to beyond 2 degrees centigrade. And this will cause the death of millions of people and extinction of many species. And what's worse is that initially those in poorer nations who've contributed less to the crisis will be harmed most initially. So it's an ecological and an ethical dilemma for us. What is a person to do? One reaction, and so I was want to describe a situation that happened recently for me at a dinner. The people who were the hosts had just redone their house. They tore it down and they reconstructed it as green as they possibly could build it. It had geothermal heat, and they had induction appliances, which are very, I can't explain it all, but it uses the least amount of energy, and it was it was primarily wood and glass, and they really thought deeply about trying to build it so that it would be a green building. At the same time, so we were talking about the climate crisis, and after we'd talked about it for a little while, the host just kind of threw up his hands and said, well, okay, we've destroyed the Earth, and I have at the most 15 more years, so I'll be gone before it gets really bad. And I'm not saying this as like, isn't he a horrible person, because he obviously thinks a lot about taking care of the climate. But that is a response. And I mean, I have a throw up my hands response sometimes too when I learn about what's going on. So it's not like, it is human to have that from time to time. Then his wife said, after we continued talking, can we talk about something else? This is really getting depressing, which is another really common response that I'm sure each of us, I know I have. Sometimes it gets really depressing and I just don't want to look. And then I think there's one other response that happens maybe with the younger generations, which is, well, maybe we can just escape. Maybe we can, you know, there's a lot of people wanting to go into outer space or, you know, explore different planets. So I think there's also maybe we can go somewhere else. You know, we've destroyed this place. Let's just go somewhere else. So those are three different human natural responses, but we're called upon to have a different response. And at the same time, it's pretty daunting. So what are we to do? And I would say we start where we are. And that's what we're asked to do when we start anything with the Dharma. We need to start where we are with the practice we have. And so we can start with the Eightfold Path, with wise intention, wise view, and mindfulness. Those are three practices that can really help us. And the Brahma Viharas. Let's not forget compassion. We really need compassion for ourselves and for all living beings. So one piece of writing that I found inspiring was from Rob Burby, who it was he just passed away last year, and he was a very respected Dharma teacher with Gaya House in England. And 10 years ago, he wrote a letter to his Sangha, which was recently published by One Earth Sangha, which is a group, an activist group of Buddhist practitioners. And in his letter, he said that waking up today includes waking up to the climate crisis. It's part of our reality. And he said that to live wakefully and authentically, we have to endeavor to somehow broaden the range and the reach of our hearts and our questioning. And with it, the compass of what the Dharma means today. We need to broaden our perspective, our seeing, no matter how uncomfortable it is. So we start where we are, but then we need to broaden too. So there's like two things. I was seeing kind of concentric circles, like here I am in Seattle, in West Seattle, and I need to see about the climate crisis here close to me, and then I need to broaden it. Now, the same thing was also expressed in 2014 in the Dharma Teachers, International Dharma Teachers Statement on Climate Change, which our founding teacher, Rodney Smith, signed in 2014. And in that statement, the Dharma teachers emphasized three Buddhist principles. One of them was mindfulness. We need to practice with mindfulness to face and respond to the crisis. One of them was ethics. We need to have compassion for all living beings. And the other one was the first noble truth. We need to see and turn towards the suffering and understand it. So so basically, we can start by looking for the truth right here and now in our own life and environment, and we can hold that truth in our heart with compassion. Even if it doesn't seem like we personally are being affected that much yet by climate change here in Seattle, if we engage mindfully with wise view and wise intention, we must broaden our perspective and our seeing, as Rob Burby said. We haven't suffered as many droughts, fires, floods, hurricanes, melting permafrost, or melting glaciers as other places. And it's easy for us to enjoy the beautiful scenery and relatively mild temperatures in the Puget Sound, the unpolluted skies most of the time, and the many rivers and lakes that are crystal clear. But we need to look deeper and for more subtle indicators. We need to acknowledge that there are harbingers of the future all around us, if we're willing to look. A few things. I'm going to start with myself, because what I've noticed, there's so much. It took me a really hard time to write this because I was just getting into all these different aspects of climate change. But I thought, no, I got to stay close to home. So I remember last summer's massive plume of smoke from wildfires that we didn't have right here in Seattle, but they affected us. And they lasted almost a week. And that was very, very hard to live with. And it was pretty scary. And it definitely felt like a harbinger of the future. And it was, we've got to wake up. The other thing that I personally notice a lot are species that we used to see, we aren't seeing as much anymore. And that includes, for me, birds, of course, the orcas in the Sound, the salmon, frogs. I used to love frogs when I was little and play with them all the time. And frogs are really, you don't see a lot of frogs anymore. Well, they're really in decline. three examples for me of these species, diminishing species that are very personal are the meadowlark. My mother used to tell me stories about my grandmother's favorite bird was the meadowlark. It had such a beautiful tune. And I have never heard a meadowlark sing, nor have I seen one. And there aren't a lot of meadows left. They're not that easy to find, meadowlarks. Mountain bluebird. I used to go visit my mother. She lived in the Sierra Nevada, and I would visit her. And oh, to see these blue, bright, bright blue bluebirds flying was just lovely. And I used to see them all the time in the summer. And then they're just fewer and fewer. And then every once in a while you'd see a mountain bluebird. So then the next thing it was that I found out a little bit more about was the salmon returning to Longfellow Creek in West Seattle, their coho salmon. And I'd been reading about them, and all the elementary kids were, you know, taking little fry and putting them in the water. And it was something that was publicized, but the mature salmon were dying before they could spawn. And some researchers at the University of Washington started analyzing the water in Longfellow Creek. And there were 200 contaminants, and this was from the University of Washington and Western Washington or Washington State, I'm not sure which other group. They finally found one chemical out of the 200 that they could connect to the death of these coho, and it was a preservative. It came from a preservative in tires. So I saw the connection between driving my car and the death of these coho. So that was pretty sobering and also kind of an example of the dilemma the difficulty with climate change is that it's the way to address it involves more than one person. Now, this is motivating me because that's the next thing. We can widen our view from what is happening close to home and get a sense of the universality of our situation. When we look at what the Buddha says when he talks about wise view, it results in penetrative thinking, which sees things as they really are, understanding the suffering and the causes of suffering. And then with mindfulness, we can see, okay, this is what's happening. Before I go ahead to the next part, which is right intention, which has to do with renunciation, I just want to say that there's an emotional response to that an individual has, like myself. So very often when I go for a walk now, or I'm in my garden, I'll be delighted by bird song or a bird, but there'll be a touch of sadness at the same time, because I'm also holding the realization that so many species are being lost. How long will you be there, little bird? Sometimes I wish I could go back to my childhood before there was any talk about climate change and just feel the delight of nature without the overtones of loss. Well, the truth is that the Industrial Revolution began in the 18th century and that the acceleration of carbon into the atmosphere started back then. So even though I didn't see it when I was a kid, nobody was talking about climate change. Our present predicament was on its way. So it really doesn't go back. It doesn't do any good to go back and wish for things the way they used to be. This is our present. This is our reality. So wise view helps us look at that and respond to it and investigate it and educate ourselves about it. Right intention or wise intention helps us also. And with wise intention, we're asked to take part, you know, to be willing to renounce and act with renunciation and with the intention of harmlessness. So when I go there, I'm thinking about the idea that about my car, because I see that the tires on my car have an effect on those coho salmon, among other things. I mean, fossil fuels are, it produces fossil fuels. But because that was close to home with me about the coho salmon, I thought, what can I do about this? And so if I look at driving my car versus walking versus public transportation, to stop cold turkey, you know, we've been talking about habits, and driving my car is definitely a habit, and it's so much easier and faster to drive my car. But I can start by driving less. So in changing my own behavior to help lessen the climate crisis, I can see the harm it's done. I can also start by reducing. I'll have a better chance of being successful if I approach my behavior and my changes that way. And as a plug for Sims Climate Action Group, we have on the website the tab is Engaged Buddhism on the website. And then under that is the Climate Action Group. And the Climate Action Group does have a list of practices for a livable planet, which are precepts. And also they have specific climate friendly actions. If you need any ideas, I think a lot of people already have ideas, but it's kind of helpful to look over the list and see that there might be other places that we could take action. So if I drive my car less, it's hard to see. This is one of the problems with responding to the climate crisis. It's hard to see where that is going to specifically lessen the harm to a specific, you know, coho salmon. But we do have to act anyway based on what our education tells us about the overall connection between our behavior and the harm we might cause. And it's good to be aware that this is a problem, so we can't use it as an excuse. Let's see. The other aspect of intention is to not cause harm. And so being able to see we have to educate ourselves, actually, because if I hadn't read that article, I wouldn't have known that tires were affecting the coho salmon. But there's a lot of research that's going on, thankfully, and we can make an attempt to keep up with it. And we can't, obviously, it's overwhelming to try to keep up with all the research. So that's why if you start close to yourself, it can expand outward. But you have a place to start. And that leads to interdependence, which is the other big issue. And the truth is that individual actions are important, but they're not enough. We need to join forces to make changes on a systemic level. The climate crisis requires personal and social transformation to save the living beings and ecosystems of the world. It's personal and social. I don't know how many of you watched the conversation between the Dalai Lama and Greta Thunberg that happened in January. I didn't watch it at the time, but I did watch it recently. And the big idea I took away from it was the importance of interdependence and recognizing interdependence, which when we meditated this morning was, we could physically feel that in the meditation. And in the first foundation of mindfulness, feeling our connection to our body helps us feel the connection to all things. The Dalai Lama kept saying that we are one family of 7 billion human beings facing the same crisis. This is a universal suffering that we're sharing. It's not about me and mine. We didn't cause it individually, and we can't solve it individually. We're called upon to educate ourselves so that we can see the causes and the connections. And it gives us an opportunity to grow our compassion for ourselves as we feel grief about the earth's suffering and for all who are suffering and will suffer. And we can see that we're not alone. There are many people who care and are trying to help. In the conversation between Greta Thunberg and the Dalai Lama, there was discussion of both the causes and possibilities for solutions that the scientists gave. And there were five films that talked about feedback loops. And it seemed to me that even though this is the circle beyond, Thorndike, Longfellow Creek and my coho salmon, this is going out to see what current science is saying are the major factors that are accelerating climate change, which I think we need to do see and understand too. And so the five films are very short, and if you haven't seen them, they touch on rising temperatures. Melting sea ice in the Arctic, forest issues, forestation issues, permafrost thawing, and disruption of the jet stream. So those are four things. They're short films. And to me, they gave me a big picture of some of the big, big issues that we need to look at and be able to face and turn toward and understand. And so there's the microcosm that we need to be mindful of, and then we need to expand outward too and see the bigger picture. The situation is daunting, and it's understandable that we might want to look the other way, but the gateway to awakening, we've been told, lies through understanding and facing suffering. We've also been told that wisdom can be balanced by compassion, and we offer goodwill towards all life without attaching to the outcome. So our job isn't to give up and say, well, we've already destroyed the earth. It's a done deal. We're at the intention part. We need to keep our intention. I heard a talk recently about, which included a reference to Joanna Macy, who some of you may know is a very well-respected activist. She's now in her 90s, and she started a long time ago, I think around the time of Chernobyl. And she talks about the Great Turning Initiative, where we would turn from being an industrial growth society to a sustainable civilization. in this video that this teacher spoke about, he said that she said, it may be too late, but we can still go down with joy. So with that as a closing, I just want to say the climate crisis is worthy of our mindfulness. It's worthy of our understanding, worthy of our holding, feeling the weight of it, feeling the sorrow of it, feeling the loss in it, and feeling the tenderness, the possibility. It chokes me up. And the connection with others who care. So I don't know why I didn't mean to start crying at the end of this, but I thought that the question for discussion could be just sharing one or two responses you have to the climate crisis, because, you know, it's a really challenging thing for us. And you can just talk about a thought you have, an emotion. It can be depression, hope, grief, or an action, something that you're doing or something you want to do. It's just a response because, you know, it's the big elephant in the room. And this is an opportunity to talk to people, you know, who care and who want to hear you. So thank you. Did everybody get a chance to talk in the small group? If anybody has like one thing to say, otherwise we'll go on to, well, I guess we have a few minutes. If there's anybody who wants to say anything to the big group, you can unmute yourself, I think.
I'd like to say one thing, which is, yes. I get the overwhelming nature of this crisis and how easy it is to feel depressed and powerless. And I think it's important for us to both honor and really hold those feelings and also understand that we actually do have the ability to do some things. There are many, 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 many things we can do. We don't have to do it all. We don't have to do big things. But we can do some things. Mm-hmm. And so while we have compassion and support each other in the difficulty, it's incumbent upon us to also use our ability to act well for each other.
Yes. Yes, that's why I was saying we act regardless without attaching to the outcome, because we don't have to save the world, but we have to act towards it because that's what is in front of us. But we don't have to attach to, and in other words, if we decide we can't, it won't work, I don't know. We don't even know anyway. What we were talking about was leave room for don't know, because we need to come with our, what we know is the right way to act. And we don't know what all the consequences will be. So we can't say nothing will work and it's not, we have to do it anyway because it's the right way to act. Yeah, we have to act. That's why I really liked that poem, because it was such a small thing, but it was so full of, I don't know what.
I wanted to add to what you and Iris said, in that what came up for me is I have experienced the powerful impact of my practice and how it has changed my life and how other people have been affected by me and how I affect others. And that gives me hope that if deep-rooted bad habits of I gave the example of having a snotty, impatient tone of voice, and that when I, because of my practice, learned about stuff, that, and then the impact of that, this is another part of our practice. And it gives me a lot of hope that, hope with kind of like a small H, you know, it may not change the whole world, but we all live in our little mini worlds, you know, and especially in the pandemic, we know, you know, those, I never thought of living in a hub before, you know, and so how we affect our little hubs, our little worlds, has an effect. And it, so I actually see a lot of hope coming from small steps, because that's all our practice is small steps, moment by moment. Anyway, that's how I come at it.
Thank you. Oh, Rose. Go ahead, Rosie.
You're muted, Rosie.
You guys have been so inspirational, starting with Lauren. It was just wonderful. It's like the sunshine outside. It's so brilliant and bright and hopeful. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosie. Well, I think we can thank you, everybody, for being here and for caring. And now I'll turn it over to Lyndall so she can close.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you for that really moving talk and a chance to address this important issue. I have quite a few announcements here, so I'm going to try to be quick so we don't go too far over. But the first thing I want to say is that Sims has started planning for the time when we're going to be able to meet in person. And so they have sent out a survey to all Sangha members to get our feelings about how we feel about that, when we will feel safe doing it, and so forth. And if you're on the Sims mailing list, you have already gotten this survey and you might have returned it. If you haven't, please be sure to do it. But if you have not received it, you can go to the Sims website, and on the homepage, there's a button there for that you can click to take the short survey. And so please do that. We want to have everybody's feelings about this, you know, step we're going to be making forward to return to a more normal way of functioning. Then also, we're going to be beginning to organize some Kalyanamitta groups, KM groups. They're sort of groups of spiritual friends. And they're a really wonderful way to get to know people and to have a chance to connect with other Sangha members and practice together in a smaller group. And usually they last about 6 months. And so Sims is going to form some new groups that will focus on this year's theme of Dharma in daily life. So the idea will be to get together and be able to talk about the talks, the exercises, share with each other, support each other. And the new groups, when they first begin, will be facilitated by a local Dharma leader to get you going and to know the facilitation process, and then the group members will take over and do their own facilitation. So if you're interested in that, they'll be on the Zoom platform, at least for the time being. If you're interested in that, contact Cubba Reese, who's doing the organizing, and I put in the chat her email, reesecubba@gmail.com. Let her know that you would be interested, so there's a sense of how many groups to form and how big they can be and that kind of thing. And try to do that sooner or later, because this process is, getting started. Okay, aside from that, on Wednesday this week, we'll have our Buddhist Essentials talk, and Steve Wilhelm and I will be speaking on the Four Noble Truths. This is from 7 to 9 p.m. Everybody is welcome. You don't need to register. You can just go on the website and find the link there. And then on Saturday, April 24th, Suze and Steve Wilhelm will be doing a day long on the topic of finding freedom in impermanence and not self. So if you would like to have a chance to have a day of practice, this would be a really great time to do that. It's a fascinating and helpful topic. And of course, you'll get to practice with our own Suze, which is great. So something to think
about. You do need to pre-register for that in order to get the link.
Yeah. And just briefly, I would like to say that in May, there'll be a day of mindfulness on the 15th. And then the weekend of the 22nd and 23rd, Narayan Levison will be doing a non-residential retreat. So those things also, you need to register to get the link. Everything about them is on the website, so it's very easy. And there's more information there. I won't go into that in too much detail since that isn't for a while, but the main things are the stuff that's coming up this month and then the survey and the Kalyanamitta groups. And also a reminder to please continue to offer Dana as it's possible for you and in, as it works for you and as you are moved to do so. It's very easy with the donate link on the website, and the contributions that you make are really appreciated by our guiding teachers and by the organization. So that's our announcements. And just taking a few minutes to close by sitting quietly together. And remembering Lauren's instruction to us to broaden our view, broaden our hearts. As we sat together this morning, we've generated a force for kindness and goodness that we can share. And today, let's see if we can share that merit and that force for goodness with all beings, not only those who are close to us, but all beings of the earth. May all beings be safe and protected, happy, peaceful. May they feel kindness, security, and the will to work together so we can all be well, be healthy together.